Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a vodcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished individual from India, Dr. Jawahar Surisetty. Dr. Jawahar, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Jawahar is an advisor to the government of India. He's an eminent psychologist, futurist, author, and innovator. He's been recognized as the Think Professor for his art of thinking, and he's among the top 24 policymakers of India. So let's first talk about your first avatar as the advisor to the government of India. Tell me about the work you do.
Okay, so the major work that we do, I have been the advisor to both governments. It was the earlier UPA government as well as the NDA government. Okay. And it's a dubious distinction to balance both this. But before I come to what we do, because the roles were different in both. Dr. Manmohan Singh was in the US to meet Barack Obama. And I had handled Barack Obama's Asia-Pacific election campaign. So, and I was doing advisory of charter schools in the US. They were stuck with something. So Obama called me and we had a discussion. And I was there in the US when Prime Minister Singh had come. So in his discussion with the president, he said that we want to ramp up the Indian education system. So if there is anyone who has who is innovative and can tell us how you work in the US, please refer him to us. So Obama had a very wry smile on his face. And he said, we have an Indian who is doing this in the US, and you are coming all the way from India and asking for help from the US. So he said, I'll put you to him. And that is how I met Dr. Singh. And that is how I started my journey as advisor to the government of India in India.
So I was going to just ask you a follow-up question. That based on the last, whatever, 7, 8, 10 years that you've been advisor to two governments, what are some of the education challenges India faces?
So first of all, it's not just education that I advise them in the current government. But yes, I was primarily brought in for education. So the challenges that we are facing is one of access, where at least 15 years from now, the access of education was not as good. So access was the major issue. Before we talk about quality, access was a major issue.
Okay.
The second was equity in education. Now, this is something which has always been there. And even during the COVID period, we have seen that there is a huge digital divide, which extends to about 37%. So that, which means one third of Indian school children have not had access to education because they were not digitally equipped. So these are some major challenges before we can talk of quality even.
So are you saying that digital enablement or empowerment is now become a critical requirement of education?
Yes, it has. And going forward, even if there is, assuming that there will be no COVID, digital empowerment is important because we have found out in the last 500 days of Corona that even if there is a lack of teacher due to distance or non-availability or whatever reasons, digital empowerment might to some extent solve the problem, if not replace the teacher, but it will solve it to some extent. So that is the reason why I say that it is required.
Very interesting. And what is being done by the government to bridge this gap of 37% which exists?
Okay, so this is interesting because there are two ways they do it.
Right.
One is the bureaucratic way of doing it and one is the political way of doing it. Politically, what they do is distribute laptops and mobile phones.
Correct.
And that happens just before the elections.
Absolutely.
I am being candid about this.
Absolutely.
It might not be politically right, but that's fine.
Absolutely. Mm.
The second or bureaucratic way of doing it is, and which is the current prime minister's way of doing it is, that we are trying to extend digitization of rural areas to the extent of 1 lakh villages in the next 5 years.
Okay.
So we've done 1 lakh in the last 7-8 years. Mm-hmm. So we want to speed that up and do it. Okay. And there are many players who are helping us do it, including Jio, Airtel. So that is bureaucratic way of doing it. And I think we'll be able to meet the numbers.
Very interesting. And two associated questions from what you have just said. You said 1 lakh villages. A total of about 650,000 villages.
Yes, yes.
So what you are saying is that the balance 550 are already empowered.
No, there are about around 2,40,000 which still remain unconnected. So we'll reach them in the next few years.
Okay, wonderful. And the second question related to this, before I move to the next segment, is you told me about the political way, the bureaucratic way. I'd like to ask you, what is the academician or the teacher's way?
See, the teacher's way is, fortunately or unfortunately, until this COVID had come, the teacher was not as digitally empowered as the student, the student was much ahead. But these 500 days, the teachers have put in a great effort to empower themselves, to skill themselves, and they've done a good job of it. But still, having said that, they are still behind the students or the current generation. So this will remain till the current generation become adults.
Okay, well said. So let me move on, Jawahar, to the next part. You know, you have been called or recognized as a think professor for your art of thinking. Before I get into any questions, help me understand what was this recognition for and what did it mean?
Okay, I'll tell you. So I was in Columbia University of New York, and there were 1,300 vice chancellors of the world whom I was wanting to address. Okay. And I was the keynote speaker. So the president of the university, in his welcome address, was wanting to tell the audience that an Indian person has come in who the India's higher education is not something great to crave for. So he was trying to justify why I was called for this. And he said that Dr. Jawahar has done his research in the US. Mm-hmm. We understand that most of the Indian research is cut, copy, paste. Mm-hmm. But Dr. Jawahar has done his research in the US. Now, I was feeling very insulted in the sense that I was the only Indian in the audience and I was on stage. I couldn't run away.
Right.
So I said, let me get back to him when I speak. So when it came to my speaking, I started my address with, in your pre-K, what do you teach to your children? Mm-hmm. So one vice chancellor got up and said, we teach A to Z, 1 to 10. I said, with all the original research that you've done, we also teach the same things, but my question is something different. And please answer this. So I said, when you teach A to Z, everything is fine. When you teach 1 to 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 is fine. But when you come to 10, have you taught the 0? The question was so deep that there was no answer. Now I said, my parents and your parents in India or in the US have taught us 1 to 10. Our teachers have taught us 1 to 10. We have forgotten how to question them. Why not 0 to 9 was the question that we needed to put for the whole system to be changed. Right. But we didn't ask that question for ages. And that is the reason we have not changed it. And then they understood that there is something here. And that started the process of thinking. In all the vice chancellors. And then at the end of the session, Columbia University and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation funded my research on the art of thinking and how to provoke thinking in school children at a very young age so that they can ask questions which might bring in social change. We don't know. And that is how this name stuck to me.
Amazing. What an amazing story. So let me now move on. You have developed two different apps. One is called Happia and Aprisan. I don't know if I've got the pronunciation right, but do tell me about each of these.
Okay. So this was, again, there was a trigger to this. Mm-hmm. The trigger was the UN Happiness Index, Global Happiness Index, mm-hmm. puts India way back into 123rd position, etc.
Right.
And for me, India is very close to my heart.
Right.
And India coming at that position, it seemed not justified.
Mm-hmm.
So I went into the Global Happiness Index and found that there is a critique possible in this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said that migrants are happy means the country is happy, is something that the UN says.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I am not bothered about what is happening that way. They are a minuscule part of the population. Whether the inner happiness of people has been measured or not is something is important and which is being ignored in the Global Health Index.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, let me, instead of just preaching that this is right, this is wrong, let me try and find out whether I can do something. And right. that is how Happy came in.
Mm,
so Happy is a index
right.
which measures your internal happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And to make it sustainable, what I have done is we have said that in all corporates, happiness has become a big deal now
mm-hmm.
because it increases corporate efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So I am saying you take this app,
mm-hmm.
Measure the happiness of your internal people mm-hmm. and department wise, we'll give you reports, we'll give you everything.
Mm-hmm.
So you can design your trainings, etc., or your welfare measures based mm-hmm. on this index. This is an HR exercise and it is as cheaply priced as $2 per year. So we wanted to make it very, so that is how Happy came in. The second was during the COVID, children were in the four walls of the
mm-hmm.
house.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, the parents' dispensation or the teacher's dispensation was, do not touch the mobile.
Mm.
Don't get on too much into the mobile.
Mm.
Come COVID, they said, get on to the mobile
mm.
Because that is how your education is going to happen.
True.
Now, even before COVID, the digital addiction had started happening. Teenagers were up late in the night,
yeah.
late in the night, and that was happening. So we thought of this, that Aprisan is actually the prison for apps.
Okay.
So what this, what we want to do is, we want to get this habit of mobile addiction out of the society because 37% of US is the time of the offices is wasted on social media or something to do with digital.
Mm.
So corporate efficiency is down 37% because of usage of these.
Mm.
The second is relationships in homes is disturbed because of excessive mobile usage.
Mm.
The third is children are distracted from their studies because of excessive uses of, and they have a sleep cycle which is disturbed. So all these three segments we had thought of and then devised this.
Mm.
Now, the major two factors of why you should use Aprisan is because one, Aprisan gives you everyone will tell you are addicted to mobile, but Aprisan gives you app-wise record of which app you are most addicted to, which are the timings which you are most addicted. So 9 to 10, I might be addicted to, let's say, Facebook. So the idea is to empower people if I am addicted, I know that I am addicted, but I can't get rid of that addiction.
Mm.
So the idea is to put Facebook in the peak addiction times in a prison. And then it does not come out.
I see. Okay.
And then 9 to 10, if you are imprisoned and your behavior is good, that 9 to 10, you don't touch Facebook.
Mm.
You are rewarded the next day, like in a prison, you are allowed to meet your people for 5 minutes on parole.
Okay.
Similarly, you get a 5-minute reprieve from that 9 to 10 next day because of your good behavior and you can access WhatsApp or whatever. So that's Aprisan.
How fascinating. But therefore, this takes me to another very interesting question, which is on what China is doing for its, on digital. They've actually called it digital opium.
Yes.
Right. And have clamped down and given restrictions, very stringent restrictions. So my question to you is that, you know, you're also thinking of something similar to be able to protect children at prison, etc. But is this the way to go? And the next question is, are we judging a generation whose only tool is digital?
No, I am not judging. And that's right. What you have said is there is a contradiction here. First of all, we can't go the China way because we are a democracy.
Correct.
So even my apps will show that we belong to an Indian democracy. I can't clamp down on anything.
Good.
So it's an empowerment tool which we are using. The second part of your question is whether I am trying to cringe the democracy or the innovation of the next generation is not. What I am looking at is the mental health and the physical health of children based on the digital addiction is what is the extent to which I want to prevent, create awareness and empower them with tools when they want to use it. That's it. Nothing else.
No, no. I'm in complete agreement with what you said about our prison, you know, because you've got to reduce it. My question to you was not about what you are doing, but I'd love to get your perspective on the very stringent clamping down in China, which has actually developed itself on technology.
See, in a communist country, as Karl Marx said, religion is the opiate of masses or opium of masses. It is similar. According to Karl Marx, again, there would have been a revolution, that is, the cycle comes up. But whenever you clamp down to a great extent, the proletariat goes into a revolution and overthrows the... So China goes into that cycles very often. So Tiananmen happened because they clamped down on students. So such clampdowns are not long-term. Because the children there are now exposed in China, are exposed to the US culture. Lots of them, because the Chinese government itself sponsored students to go to US.
Right.
So now, having seen that democratic culture, if you clamp down, there is going to be a revolution, or they will find out ways in which they can bypass this clamp down. And that is very easy for this younger generation.
Well said, well said. So I'm now going to move to the next segment of our conversation. And I think we'll have time only for this part, about your books. And I always have a lot of respect for authors, because I always say authors have the courage to put their thoughts out or in the open and be ready to be criticized. What I know is that you have written two books, Mama and Me and Go to Hell or Come to Me.
Yes.
Please tell me about these books. What was your hypothesis to write these?
Okay. So as I grew as a family, I started gaining knowledge. And that is how these books came into being. So the first book, which is Mama and Me, has sold, I think, it is now close to around 1.8 million across the world. That book is for parenting for 0 to 5 years, newborn to 5 years. So the requirements are different, which we have mentioned in the national education policy these days. Long ago, what I realized was that the child's growing up years, say 65% of his brain development happens in those 5 years. It happens in 8 years. But I am assuming these 5 years are very important.
Right.
So if that is the case, then why do we parent them in a way in which I want to see my wishes being fulfilled in that child, something as so we mirror ourselves in the children and then parent them, which is a wrong way of doing it. So I said, and what I practice is that my children, I was in Z then earlier. Since we were uplinking from Hong Kong, I would come back at home at around 2:30, and I wrote in one of my articles on Times of India that I could see my children growing horizontally and not vertically. So when I was going, they were sleeping. When I came back, they were sleeping. And one fine day when I came back, I felt, what would I do with this money if I am not able to see my children play, etc., etc. Then I started enjoying my parenthood. So this was the primary spark to leave the corporate world Because I was working that kind. So then I started penning down whatever. So I would take them, instead of saying that this is the railway engine, I would put them before the railway engine or beside the railway engine to say that this is the railway engine.
Okay.
Similarly, every 3 months, I would take them to one state and I showed them the whole state. So Taj Mahal is this, they would know. By the time they were sensible enough to understand, they had seen the whole of the country.
Wow.
So my practical parenting guide was Mama and Me.
Okay.
The second one is Go to Hell or Come to Me. Now this is the teenage years.
Okay.
So the attitude of a typical teenager, according to me, was if you listen to me, it's fine. Otherwise, you go to hell. And this is the typical attitude of a teenager. So when I faced the same problems with my two boys, we tried some experiments and it worked. So we have two examples I'll give you. One is that we have a ministry in our home. Once the boys became teenagers, so I will be the prime minister, my wife will be the home minister, and the two ministries can be library, since every 3 months we are traveling for a week. So the tourism minister is supposed to plan which state will travel. This is the budget I'm giving you, 1 lakh rupees for all the four of us, stay, everything included. So we started planning. So the children would do some research, get back and then come back. This is the expense. 1 lakh 4,000 is coming. I said, cut down 4,000 somewhere. So they would do all those calls. So that is how then the library minister, see, all four of us are avid readers, but we have different tastes.
Okay.
So 200 rupees was the budget given to them a month. Newspapers, magazines for all the four of us. But see that all the four of us get magazines. So how do you balance that is something that they learned. So this is one way that we thought of doing. So these are some experiments that I have mentioned in the book.
Fascinating. What a fascinating journey you've had.
Mm-hmm.
And on that note, Jawahar, I'm going to say thank you so much. It's been such a privilege speaking to you. Thank you for talking to me about such an amazing journey you've had, about all your contributions to education. And what's most fascinating is the way you have, you know, constructed your books around your own family, you know, and your own experiences. Thank you so much and good luck. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.